CoinWorld Plus is your new way to collect, manage your inventory, digitally authenticate coins, create your want list, buy and sell coins, and much more. Learn more about CoinWorld Plus at coinworldplus.com or download the app now at Google Play or the App Store.
Welcome to the CoinWorld Podcast with your host, Jeff Stark.
And as I've said from day one of this show, this is a big tent hobby. There's a lot of room for folks.
And Larry Jewett.
And learning has been such a tremendous amount of this journey.
The CoinWorld Podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of the CoinWorld Podcast. I'm Jeff Stark.
And I'm Larry Jewett. And I know I say this often, but I really mean it every time I say this. We've been very fortunate enough to have some great guests throughout 2023 and even before that. But today's episode, that really got me excited once you were able to line up our guests and we were able to make it happen. And it's going to be a great interview for you to hear later on here. So thanks, Jeff. Thanks for making this episode one to listen to. I think this one's going to be one of the more popular episodes we have thanks to your work in getting our guests for today. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. Should we tell them who is on the show this time, this week?
I figured it would be up to you because you're okay. The one who did all the work. So.
Okay. So this is Tim Webb, who is the incoming vice president of the Civil War Token Society. And we're doing this certainly because it is an important and helpful topic to explore, but because a listener asked us, hey, why don't you do something on Civil War tokens? That was Peter DeWitt. We thank Peter for his suggestion. And because of that, we jumped, acted quickly, and got Tim on board. And so you'll hear that in just a bit. And, after we do all our usual stuff, but fun to cover the topic and talk about it in broad strokes. There's I have a few Civil War tokens in my collection. I think you have at least one or two, Larry, or you're eyeballing some in any event.
Yep.
So if you don't know what they are, stay tuned. If you do know what they are, stay tuned and maybe you can learn something in addition to what you already know. But it's we thank Tim for joining us for this episode. We'll do that in just a bit.
We also want to thank Peter for the feedback. It just goes to show right there that if you have an idea, we certainly would be happy to entertain it. Want to thank the Civil War Token Society for reacting quickly to our request, too. That helps sometimes. Everybody's very, very busy this time of year, but we were able to get that in short order. So may not be able to guarantee the success we had with this one, but definitely we welcome the insight that you can provide for it right here, because sometimes in our haste, we don't see the forest for the trees, I think. And I just want to make sure that we get that opportunity to provide you with the kind of content that you're looking for here. I want to thank our sponsors here. One thing I want to take care of, a little bit of a housekeeping note here, is that after this episode, we're going to take a little bit of a break, a very brief break, as a matter of fact, and going to skip a week, then come on back here and close out the year with a big finish. So looking forward to it as things are gearing up for 2024, and we still got some things to take care of in 2023, including today's podcast. The year's not over yet by any stretch of the imagination, as we're only into the early stages of December here. So we're glad that you're along with us. And, we're not yet ready to make our New Year's resolutions, but I do have a couple of things in mind, and we may be talking about that in just a couple of weeks.
All right. For now, though, I think we should go back in time and talk about what happened in numismatic history and coin world history. So, I want to go to December 5. There was two things that happened that day in different years that jumped out to me. One of them was in 1848 when then President James Polk was making an address to Congress. In that message, he confirmed discovery of gold in California. And we know how important that was to the expansion of the country. There's a numismatic legacy to that with the 1849 gold, California, or CAL gold, I guess. I think it's a dollar. It's in the Smithsonian, right? And so that was fun. But then I also found something interesting. That was the day in 1980 when the Bank of Canada's Currency Museum opened to the public. And that's particularly timely because the January issue of Coin World has a story about the museum. And I got to go there in recent weeks when I was there for the Mint Directors Conference and get to see things behind the scenes. And so 1980 was when that opened, December 5. And they've revamped it since then. Of course, I don't want to give the whole story away. You'll have to check out the issue of Coin World coming up, the January issue, in just a week or two. But that was what jumped out to me in numismatic history.
Well, that's great. I mean, because we don't always get lucky like that the stories dovetail with what happened in history there. But certainly a couple of events right there surrounding some important things happening. And that's what we take pride in providing some of this great information. And I appreciate once again, it's just like this is a thank you, Jeff episode, because I mean, thank you for arranging the guests. Thank you for providing us with the information. Let's see if we can go for the big three. I thank you for doing the research to figuring out what issue we need to go with this week in Coin World history.
Hey, yeah. You know, I'm reminded as you send all these accolades my way, it's, you know, Thanksgiving was just a few weeks ago, and the turkey was real thankful when he was getting all that extra corn, but that turned into less than good thing. So don't flatter me too much. In any event, I went to 1967 because that was the year that the Civil War Token Society was founded, and specifically looking at the December 6th issue. What was the big story that week? Well, the headline reads, "Rare Brasher Doubloon Returning to Yale Library, Stolen in 1965. Subhead, Insurance Firm Recovers Famed Gold Coin in Florida." This was at the time, and I guess certainly now it would still be one of the world's most valuable coins, but at the time it was a $100,000 coin. It was recovered in South Florida and was on its way back to the Sterling Memorial Library at Yale University, New Haven, Connecticut, from where it was stolen May 29, 1965. This event offered a dramatic conclusion to the story that developed a few years prior. How did it come to be? Well, New York coin dealer Hans M.F. Schulman was called by insurance executives to authenticate the coin with the assistance of his office manager, a insurance adjuster out of Florida that specialized in recovering stolen goods, recovered the coin after 4 months of negotiations. They refused to say how or from whom the coin was recovered. So the Brasher Doubloon is a famous numismatic rarity. I believe it's featured in a television show in the past, and it's certainly been anytime one of the rare ones come up for auction, there's at this time, the story says there was only 6 known. This example was, one of the examples, I should say, was part of the Virgil Brand collection. So a lot of these, they have some famous provenance. And, when you're talking about what today are $1 million coins, anybody who owns them usually gets to sort of add their name to the roster of of folks who've been caretaker for it in the past. And that was interesting. I also found another story on the front page, Attention Centers on Britain's Devaluation. This is particularly interesting given our discussion with Kenneth Rendell maybe a month ago. The story reads, numismatic-minded economic students today continued to watch aftermath developments following Great Britain's November 18 devaluation of the pound from 280 to 240, bringing the English penny and the U.S. cent into equal valuation for the first time in history. One of the big questions was asked whether there would be a 1967 coinage date freeze that would last until decimalization in 1971. Of course, those who heard our interview with Kenneth Rendell will remember that he was there when the decimalization, when the farthing, I should say, was demonetized and no longer in circulation. So I that to me was interesting. It's not the devaluation is not, they didn't pull stuff from circulation. They were just setting the target value of the currency, but it reminded me of our discussion not so long ago. So that is this week in Coin World History.
We had several letters that were interesting here, and some of them were very, very brief. So we may have more than one to talk about here. And one of them was this letter from L. Bowers of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It said, I heard of coin collecting only 2.5 years ago. No sooner did I start than this clad type came out. I have no interest in this type of coin. I sure missed the boat. I have worked 30 years, have always handled money, cashier in a theater for 7 years, cashier in a restaurant for 10 years, and hat check girl in a big nightclub, yet never heard of this hobby. Why hadn't someone told me of this years ago? Well, except for the gender, I, you know, right away thought of you and your days working in retail, how you would go through the till. And if this person had had that same understanding, then perhaps they would have gotten better enjoyment out of it. There's another letter, another brief letter, says, I am an avid collector of medallic art, all kinds, all shapes, most all metals. And the fact is, around here, there aren't too many people I can talk to about my hobby. So the only way I can communicate to collectors of metals is via mail. Maybe some metal collectors will write to me. I enjoy getting mail, and I will answer every letter concerning metals. And that was from C.E. Jensen of Mount Vernon, New York. And then they shared the address. The final letter I'm going to talk about talked about the fact that Coin World of November 22nd, 1967, listed several major numismatic groups. I would appreciate it very much if you would mention the group of which I am a member. We have members in 31 states, plus the District of Columbia, Australia, Canada, and England. And that was from Mrs. N.J. Keel, who was the Secretary Treasurer of the Society of Ration Token Collectors. Now, the Society of Ration Token Collectors was established in 1966. And now you can find out information about it by going to the Token and Metal Society, because they've got all kinds of information about that. So it in 67, it was striving as a new organization to try to get recognized. And now, 55 years later, it's getting some recognition as part of the Token and Metal Society. So that's kind of interesting to me. And it's just like, goes to show you, maybe you don't see them listed among the, quote, major numismatic groups, but they're out there. And it goes to show you, you know, how broad this topic of numismatics can get to be. And that's why we're very fortunate to even be talking about tokens again today with our interview with Tim Webb that's going to be coming up here momentarily. In fact, it's probably going to come up after the trivia question, but I don't know if we have time for the trivia question, do we?
Oh, sure we do.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to hold your feet to the fire. So last episode, I asked you, because I saw one of these for sale. I did not get it, but it's one of those that is a classic design. What note is known as the porthole note?
Oh, yes.
So there's, I guess, three components to this for the correct answer. What do you think is the answer?
Well, I'm trying to remember. First of all, it's a very distinctive note because you'll see, I mean, the faces in a circle. I mean, Abraham Lincoln, I'm not sure. I think it's Abe Lincoln. I think only it was Abe Lincoln. Yep. And it was from the 1920s. And other than that, I don't remember. I mean, it was a great distinct look, but it was Lincoln from the 20s. That makes it a $5 denomination. I don't know what else you're after.
Okay. So you've got, I'm going to give you partial credit because I'm going to give you 2/3 credit because it was from the 20s. It's series 1923, 100 years ago. $5, you were correct on that. It's a silver certificate.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not a Federal Reserve note, not a Federal Reserve Bank note, not a gold certificate, not a U.S. note, a silver certificate. So that is the answer. And you got pretty dang close to it from what I asked. So not bad. Now, we can't have an interview with somebody about Civil War tokens and I not ask a Civil War token question, related question, right?
Makes sense to me. Yeah.
So this time I mentioned in the interview, you're going to have to listen close, that the first African-Americans to issue tokens were issued Civil War tokens. And I even said, I think that there were 8 of them. What about those tokens and those token issuers, how can you distinguish them? There's a certain class of business that these men were engaged in. So what were they? What was their business that they issued Civil War tokens? And should I ask a second question? Is that too hard?
I don't know that it's too hard because I think it's mentioned in the interview and I think we'll take our chances on that. Plus, I mean, it's just good to know. So, I think so.
Because I could have also asked or instead asked about the Civil War tokens from Sidney, Ohio, but we'll stick with this. We'll stick with the question and implore listeners to check out the interview right now. The Coin World Podcast is delighted today to be joined by Tim Webb, the incoming vice president of the Civil War Token Society, and also the editor of Civil War Era Numismatics, the society's quarterly journal. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
I want to jump off and just lay the groundwork a little bit before we get too deep in this. Somebody new to the hobby might not understand what is a Civil War token, and then we can get into why they came into existence and all that. But just what is this if I've never heard this topic?
So Civil War tokens were made between April 1861 and April 1865, the years of the Civil War, the 4 years. And that's what we consider to be a Civil War token. And there's 3 main types of Civil War tokens. There's the store cards, and they are metallic or hard rubber tokens that specify either a merchant, a brand, or a product. And merchants could have them made, have custom dies made with a little advertisement for their business. And usually a patriotic theme or an Indian head or Liberty head or something on the other side. Then there's what we call patriotic Civil War tokens. And they were less expensive for the merchants to purchase. And they were generic alternatives. And they had patriotic themes and stuff like that on them, but no advertising. And then there's a rare class of Civil War tokens. It's they're called sutler tokens. And what a sutler was, he was a merchant that was commissioned by the army to supply goods at military outposts. or in wagons loaded with goods, they would follow the troops into the field to supply them with luxury items and sometimes even liquor, which was illegal, but that's what they did. So those are the types of Civil War tokens that we're talking about. We think maybe about 50 million Civil War tokens were struck during 4 short years, and that probably 3 million survived to this day.
I will say I was surprised to hear the Sutler tokens classed in there. I just thought they were a distinct token of the era. So that's good to know. Right off the bat, I'm learning something here. Why did these tokens come about? I mean, what purpose did they serve during wartime? Why would you want to advertise your business?
Yeah. So early in about 1862, there was kind of a panic. People thought that the price of metals was going to go up, and they started hoarding, pulling all of the coins out of circulation, all of the gold first, and then silver coins got pulled out and hoarded out of circulation. And then eventually even cents and half cents got pulled out of circulation. So there was no change available. So merchants couldn't make change and conduct business. So there was several things, schemes that came up. The merchants could have low denomination script printed to give as change. Encased postage stamps came about at this stage. The federal government actually authorized postage stamps to be legal currency, legal tender, I guess. Also, they had small envelopes with postage stamps inside that could pass as currency. The government printed postal currency and fractional currency. But there's a lot of distrust in paper money at the time. It's been estimated that there may be a third of the paper money and script that was in circulation was counterfeit. So people just didn't trust it. They wanted something that had intrinsic value, you know, so they trusted coins. And so some die sinkers of the time saw an opportunity, and they would sell 1,000 tokens, for instance, to merchants with an advertisement on one side, advertising their business. And they could be purchased for like from $6 to $9 per 1,000. So the die sinkers would make a profit. And also the merchant could make a profit because they were getting these cent tokens for less than a cent. And almost all of the Civil War tokens are the size of the small cent. So the Flying Eagle cent and the Indian head cents had just come, been minted. So they were familiar with the small size cents. And most of the Civil War tokens are that size.
Now, that's interesting, because that was going to be my question, because I was wondering if all of them, most of everyone that I've ever seen was round and about the size of the cent. Obviously, the script and the postage stamps were different configuration. But did they have any like perhaps diamond shaped tokens or anything like that that were out there that weren't round?
No, but there are some that are larger, you know, up to 24 millimeters or something. You know, they're like the size of a large cent, for instance. There's a few of those out there. And they think that maybe they weren't necessarily made to make change with, but they were, in fact, advertising pieces for the most part.
Was this something that was prevalent in certain regions of the country, or was it something that we would see in all of the existing regions at the time?
Right. So Civil War tokens were mainly a northern phenomena. So the East Coast, you know, New York, and the Midwest, what we could call the Midwest now, which was really the West states, through Wisconsin, basically to Wisconsin. And Cincinnati was a hotbed of Civil War token merchants that issued them. There are a few Civil War tokens that were made for Southern state merchants. There are some for Tennessee. There's one we know of from Huntsville, Alabama. And then there's another very rare token from New Orleans. But it was mostly a northern phenomena. I think the South had better things to do with metal, and probably due to the blockades that the North imposed on the South, they had problems getting planchets to strike tokens with, and they may not have had the manufacturing capabilities in the South. So the South mainly relied on paper.
Was there ever any problem with this? This is a private solution to a national problem, it seems. Was there ever any problem coming from the federal government saying, you know, you're copying, you're mimicking coinage, stop that? Was that a fine line they walked?
Well, so the Civil War token makers wanted the tokens to look legitimate. So often they used like an Indian head on one side so that it would look like an Indian head cent. But many of the tokens have like 1 cent on the back with a small knot above it. So it would say not 1 cent to kind of make sure that they were kind of skirting the laws. But then I think in 1864, the government kind of cracked down and said, you got to stop doing this. And
I know there's some examples in like Massachusetts where they dated the coins earlier, but they were still issuing them later. Was that sort of surreptitious way to get around that? Was that something practiced in this case?
Yes. Yeah. So the die sinkers, you know, and the token manufacturers didn't stop immediately when the government told them to stop. They would use earlier dated dies to continue creating Civil War tokens for the merchants. So there was some of that.
Yeah, you talked about how they would use the Indian head, or they would use the flying eagle, or they would use that. Some of the things that we were familiar with. Was there any type of creativity employed? Anybody try to do something and be successful at it to make it a work of art versus just a practical functional piece?
Oh, yeah. Some of the die sinkers were masters, and like Mohsen and Marr in Milwaukee have some beautiful tokens. And there's die sinkers in New York that had beautiful tokens. And Cincinnati, there were some very nice ones. But there's also very crude tokens made. There were some amateurs that got into the token creation business. And some of those are the most sought after Civil War tokens. They have really crude die work. A lot of Civil War tokens have misspellings of words. They'll even have the wrong state. Like, for instance, there's a Ligonier, Indiana Civil War token that says Ligonier, Michigan. So there's a lot of errors. If you like error, Civil War tokens might be right up your alley.
And I'll tell you, I was in search of one of them in particular. My father-in-law, his last name is Dix, D-I-X. And of course, that's one of the most famous error tokens that's out there. Tell us about that one.
So that's a patriotic Civil War token. Dix was the Treasury Secretary, I believe, for the Union. And he sent Treasury agents to New Orleans and to protect the mint, I guess, is what it was in New Orleans. And he famously said, if anybody tries to take down our flag, shoot them on the spot. And one of the famous errors in Civil War tokens is one that says, shoot him on the spoot. So when the die sinker was doing the letter punches on the die, when he got over to spot to put the letters in for spot, he probably thought he was writing shoot. You know what I mean? So they put two O's in there. And so it says shoot 'em on the spoot. Everybody likes those.
Oh, that's a fun one. I know you got to have one of the regulars and one of the error ones. Yes. How quickly did these become more than monetary substitutes and something that collectors glommed onto? Whether that was did that happen during the war? Did it take the end of the war? What was that like?
Yeah, so a lot of numismatists actually during the war would go into the shops that made the tokens, and they would bring in planchets of off metals and have rarities struck. So they would have illogical mulings, you know, the two dies that these special tokens were made didn't make sense. And they also would bring in copper nickel cents and have Civil War tokens struck on the cent. So you can see the cent under as an understrike on some Civil War tokens. And they even had dimes that were struck, silver dimes and even quarters that were struck with Civil War token dice. They ran wild. I mean, there's a lot of what we call numismatic or collector strikes, and they tend to be rare and for the most part uncirculated. And there's many of them. There's thousands of varieties of those. So it was a numismatist's paradise.
So with thousands of varieties, how do collectors approach this topic generally?
So there's actually about 12,000 varieties of Civil War tokens struck just in that four-year period. Some people focus just on patriotics. You know, they want one patriotic, one of each die that was used. And other collectors tend to focus on store cards. That's what I focus on is Civil War store cards. And people might decide, I want to get one from each state, or I want to get every Civil War token that was issued in New York City, for instance. So there's many different ways of collecting them. Some people collect them by the merchant's business, you know, so like dry goods stores. There's a lot of Civil War tokens from dry goods stores. But there's also some unusual occupations like butter packer. We even have a gynecologist Civil War token. So some people like to collect unusual occupations. There's a lot of quack medicine Civil War tokens where they're advertising, you know, different types of cough medicine and stuff like that. So there's a lot of fun stuff.
And oh yeah.
One of my favorites, I like errors, die cutting errors. One of my favorites is a Empire Saloon token from Providence, Rhode Island. It's very crudely cut. The letters, they didn't really use letter punchers. They actually hand carved the letters into the dies. And so some of the letters are reversed and upside down and stuff like that. And I like that kind of thing.
It seems like there's, as you know, we've talked about on this show many times, the hobby writ large has room for everybody. It seems like Civil War tokens are a microcosm of that. In, you know, they really live that truism that there's something for everybody in that field.
Yes. And one thing I like about Civil War tokens is there's a history there's a history of each of the merchants that issue these Civil War tokens. And it really gives you a feel for what the times were like 160 years ago. And the Civil War Token Society has a lot of researchers that go out and research each of these issuers of Civil War tokens and find out what, you know, they research, you know, what's the story behind this person? We have some scoundrels, we have politicians, we have a lot of interesting characters, and they write articles and submit those to the journal, and we publish them. So there's history behind each one of these tokens.
And there's even, I think you were telling us before the show that the first tokens issued by African Americans were Civil War tokens. And so there really is, you know, pick a topic, an area to collect, and there's something there for everybody. You mentioned the journal that comes with membership. What are the best ways people can learn about these, and why should they become a member of the Civil War Token Society?
So it's inexpensive to join the Civil War Token Society. It's $18 a year, and members receive the quarterly journal. On our website, cwtsociety.com, books can be ordered. The Society publishes a store card book and a book of patriotics, and they're all very well illustrated. Nearly every die is well illustrated, and all the varieties are listed. The store card book is going through a fourth revision right now, and the patriotic book is on its sixth edition. And those books are available out there. They're about $100 a piece, which sounds like a lot of money, but with your first couple of purchases of Civil War tokens, they'll pay for themselves.
Awesome. And that was CWTSociety.org. Was that it?
Yeah. .com.
.com. Sorry. And
The society meets every year at the summer ANA for a general business meeting, and usually somebody gives a presentation, and it's neat to, you know, just connect with other Civil War token collectors at that time. So.
Awesome. Any closing thoughts, Larry? Any other questions?
One thing I meant to ask this earlier is, do the grading services accept the tokens and do grading on them?
Yes. Absolutely. There's a lot of slabbed Civil War tokens.
Okay. Well, that's it. That's going to be my quest right there. The first quest is going to be my $18 is going to go there because payday is tomorrow. So
go take a look at eBay. There's thousands of Civil War tokens listed on eBay. That's typically where they're traded. And there's an auction going on right now if you'd like to see some really high grade rare Civil War tokens at civilwartokens.com. That's Steve Hayden's auction site. And there's an auction going on right now. I think there's 3 days left if you'd like to go see that.
Yep. I had a chance to look at the display at the Pittsburgh show. So just the idea that, they're out there. Certainly there are some great things, and they all tell stories. I mean, depending upon what story you're looking for right there, as I mentioned earlier about looking for the spoot and still haven't made a concerted effort, but going to look into that and find them, because there's plenty of different ways you can learn, but the best way is to get involved with the organization. So Tim, I want to thank you for your time. Pass along that information again, cwtsociety.com. Thanks so much, Tim.
Thank you.
That was our interview with Tim Webb of the Civil War Token Society. Hopefully you enjoyed it as much as we did. And we certainly learned a bit and had fun talking to him.
Yes, indeed. I mean, Tim brought a lot of knowledge to the joining the Civil War Token Society, CWTSociety.com, is only $18 a year, as he mentioned. And it's a great deal, great bargain, great community, obviously. And there's a lot to learn. You think about all that's out there and how much you think about, you hold one of these in your hand and you just imagine what the time was like. It's kind of a neat thing, and especially if you happen to be in a region that has some kind of a historic connection to that era, and it's well worth checking into. I mean, with me and my varied collecting interests, it's just something that has a lot of potential. But I got to warn you now, there are some that are not that easy to come by. So,
yeah, and I'm pleased to have one of the few from St. Louis. So there's they even made it as far west as St. Louis in the war. So fun stuff. We hope you had a good time with it. And as we say every week, until next time.
And next time is going to be in a couple of weeks. Happy collecting.
Thank you for listening to the Coin World Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you next week.
Coin World Plus is your new way to collect, manage your inventory, digitally authenticate coins, create your want list, buy and sell coins, and much more. Learn more about Coin World Plus at coinworldplus.com or download the app now at Google Play or the App Store.